All right. At this time, it's February 18th. I think it's about, it's 9:04 in the year of 2021. I'd like to open the meeting and call to order the TPA Governing Board meeting. The Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting both in person and virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. Anyone who wants to join us virtually in the contact information for assistance are provided in our published meeting agenda, which is on our website. At this time, normally we have an invocation, but what I'd like to do is, I think this is about the 1 year anniversary where COVID really hit us. And I'd just like us to stand and take a moment of silence for all of the almost 450,000 or more than that lives that have been lost and all of those who have been suffering and all of the challenges we've been enduring for this past year. So if we could stand with a moment of silence, I'd appreciate that. Thank you. Would everyone please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, all nations, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I think I see a few faces that I may be attending perhaps for the first time. Welcome, all right, to the TPA board meeting. And with that, Margie, could you do the roll call?
Joni Brinkman, Joelle Flores. I'm sorry. And just to note for my virtual attendees, I do have a script that I'm not paying attention to. For those that are attending virtually, I'm only calling the in-person attendees. We will get to the virtual attendance in the modification section. So Joni Brinkman said here, Joelle Flores, Stephen Grant, Jim Koretsky.
Present.
Douglas Lawson, Maria Marino, Melissa McKinley,
here.
Michael Napoleon, Corey Nearing, Joseph Peduzzi, Shelley Petrolia,
here.
Fred Pinto,
here.
Chelsea Reed,
here.
Maria Sachs, Scott Singer,
here.
Andy Thompson,
thankful to be here.
Pam Triolo, Catherine Waldron, Robert
here.
Weiroth, Greg Weiss,
here.
Steve Wilson is excused. We have a quorum in person, Mr. Chair.
Okay, now, are there any modifications to today's agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Pursuant to state law, a quorum of the TPA board must be physically present at the advertised meeting site in order to conduct the meeting and take action as a body. However, additional members may participate remotely, provided that they have a significant circumstance that justifies their absence, with significant circumstance being reasonably determined by the physically present members. I have a few members that have provided a brief explanation of the significant circumstance preventing their in-person attendance. I will read the list so that the board may determine if these members will be admitted into the meeting as virtual participants. Please note that voting members approved to participate remotely will be enabled to participate in debate, and also that they must vote unless they have documented a conflict of interest on a particular item. So I do have that Commissioner Peduzzi has asked, please accept this as my request to attend the TPA meeting virtually, as I have conflicting city meetings and am concerned about COVID exposure. Next, I have Councilman Napoleon. He is requesting to attend virtually due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic and inherent exposure risk factors. Additionally, I have Mayor Joelle Flores that has been at risk with COVID-19 and is not permitted to enter our office. I also have Mayor Pam Triolo, who is on sick leave and will need to participate remotely. And I believe I have one more. I'm sorry. He came in person. So that is it.
Okay. Well, for those who are ill, we certainly hope you get well fast. With that said, are there any members here who have an objection to any of the board members attending remotely?
Move to approve all of the virtual attendance of those who've given their excuses.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. We have no opposed. All right. With that, then all of the virtual members are now part of the meeting and will participate. For those attending virtually, I just want to share a reminder of, about the process and ways for public comment to be made. Written comments may be submitted online at the website provided in the agenda, which is on our website. Verbal comments may be made by a virtual attendee using the raised hand feature in the Zoom platform. Verbal or written comments may be provided by any in-person attendee submitting a comment card available at the welcome table. Do we have we received any general comments of items not on the agenda or any advanced comments?
No general public comments, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so with that, then we'll move on. We're going to have comments now. I'll start out with some comments and comments from members of the board. Tomorrow, I'll be attending the quarterly CEFTEC meeting at the Broward County MPO, where we'll be considering a list of regional projects for transportation regional initiatives, or TRIP funding. I love all the acronyms we have. It reminds me of my military days. As a reminder, TRIP funds are state funds provided as incentives for local governments and the private sector to help pay for critically needed projects that benefit regional travel commerce. The Florida Department of Transportation will pay up to 50% of the non-federal share of project costs for public transportation facility projects. There's some additional information that I'd like to ask Nick to share with us in terms of understanding kind of what I call the rules of engagement for these different levels of funding and the potential impacts it could have on us individually if we kind of don't track the rules properly. Nick, you're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess as preface to this remark, I'm going to mention that we do send out the Florida MPOs. There are 27 of us, and we have a formal partnership through the Metropolitan Planning Organization Advisory Council, the Florida MPOAC. Every week, I send out a weekly legislative update from the MPOAC that highlights some transportation-related bills that have been introduced, their progress through the various committees, and potential impact or potential success passage in the legislature. One of the items that came up in the MPOAC legislative update this past week was the impact of local government requesting earmarks. And so what we're essentially going to say to you is, please don't request transportation-related earmarks. And the reason for that is those dollars, there is no special pot of money in the Florida legislature for transportation-related earmarks. If a project is funded through an earmark bill, through an appropriation bill, it will jump all of the TPA priority projects in line for funding and force at least one or more of those projects that have been established through the TPA planning process to be delayed. So we're asking you to value the process that we work together to identify projects and fund them. And if you're going to ask for legislative earmarks, don't ask for transportation. Go for fire stations, go for public buildings, things like that that are not going to impact our transportation revenues. I guess that's my basic pitch. We've had a lot of discussions about this at the MPOAC on a statewide level. My hope is that if the legislature would like to offer earmarks, that they will create a funding pot that will allow them to do so on an annual basis without adversely impacting the priorities that have worked their way to the front of the line through a traditional planning process. But until that happens, we're asking you to value the process and please resist the temptation to pursue legislative earmarks for transportation.
Anyone have any comments they'd like to make about that? I was looking, your eyebrows were raised.
We are certainly guilty of that. I can't promise you that we won't stop advocating for additional road resources for the Glades area. The pot of funding for the SCOP budget is in addition to what is budgeted statewide. I have to talk a little further into it.
Maybe the mic is a little closer.
Okay.
That's good.
The funding that we request for SCOP is actually money that's made available statewide that we have to competitively apply for. But that is in addition to monies that are already in the budget and shouldn't be coming out of these programs. But we do seek an appropriation to help with repaving on roads in the Glades for the entire Glades region. I don't think that Senator Polsky is going to back off making that request, but maybe Todd could give us an update on Laren. I love catching him off guard. It's payback for when I had to work for him.
Well, it's fair, they say.
I'm sorry, Commissioner, you needed an update on what's specific?
Do we have Senator Polsky and Representative Skidmore, and are they carrying an appropriation request this year for funding for Glades area roads?
Yeah, so we are putting in a request for specifically for the funding of the SCOP program, and it's a $9 million request that has been allocated potentially up to $15 million that we helped create. So they're engaged with us on that. It's a statewide appropriation, so it's not specific to the Glades, but it's a programmatic fund through the Department of Transportation that we've worked with staff of the legislature in the House and the Senate to allocate. So we're going to be working with our district senator and representative, but also to other affected areas throughout the state. There are a number of communities that benefit from those dollars.
But traditionally, they have made an additional request for $1 million for repaving projects in the Glades. Are we still requesting that?
No, we're not requesting that one. We're really focusing on the larger pot of funding going up there.
And Mr. Chair, if I could make two clarifications. The first one, thank you for that. Any programs that have been established by the legislature with funding attached to them, like SCOP, do not have the negative effects that I was describing. It's only when you're seeking a line item for a project that is not being applied to a particular program that you could potentially have an adverse effect. And then I also want to remind the members of the TPA that the legislative appropriations have a risk reward attached to them. The reward is obviously if you win the money, you get the funds for the project. The risk is that if the project is funded by the legislature and then line item vetoed by the governor, then that is construed as lack of state support for that project. And all funding that has been allocated to that project in the state budget is also removed. So we want, if you've been able to compile together through other approaches, traditional approaches, the funding needed for a project, and then you seek an appropriation to fill a gap, and that appropriation is line item vetoed, you could also potentially lose the other funds that have been assembled for that project. So I just want you to be aware that there are risks associated with this and adverse effects on other projects that may have been identified and prioritized through this board.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Sir?
Just a quick comment. I very much appreciate that guidance. It's very timely. We had a council meeting on Tuesday, and I was just sharing the status of a project that's addressed in 4A1. Where we had asked for FDOT to reconsider, you know, the priorities they were assigning the projects. One of the members of the council had suggested that we ask for an earmark, which we were not going, I was not going to do, but I do appreciate the guidance because then it's helpful to go back to others. You know, each one of us may need to share that with our respective council's commission. So thank you for that.
That's good. Good timing. Anyone else? If not, we'll move on. I'm sorry, Commissioner, I didn't see you.
That's okay. Nick, is it also possible, though? I mean, would we potentially be able to get money from other counties' projects and supersede them?
Potentially. I mean, the statewide...
doesn't necessarily mean that it's just going to be taken from Palm Beach County projects. It would come for the state, and so other projects could be impacted, but not necessarily any of ours.
It is a higher likelihood that our own prioritized projects will be impacted, but it is potentially true that if a line item appropriation for a project is approved by the legislature, that it could adversely affect a neighboring county instead of ours. It really depends on what kind of facility is seeking the funds and what flavor of money is available to answer that appropriation. It's unfortunate to say, but if it's a county or a city road, the state will seek to use the TPA's surface transportation program funds, which are our local initiative dollars, and that will directly affect one of our local initiative projects or more if a project is given a line item appropriation. if it's on a state highway, it could potentially adversely affect neighboring counties because they could pull money off of a project in Broward.
I'm thinking about the delays on Atlantic Avenue widening.
Sure.
And, you know, whether they would, that would be beneficial to try and get money for that since we keep getting pushback year after year after year.
Well, I think we've certainly made our agency's priorities known to the department and said we want to accelerate funding, not delay funding for those two capacity projects in the kind of western unincorporated area west of Delray Beach.
Okay. Anyone else? I don't see any other cards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick update. Nick and I had our quarterly field trip to Orlando for the MPOAC meeting.
I was just going to ask you to give
us. You're going to ask me? Well, see, I'm just so impulsive, I couldn't wait for you.
Okay.
We had a good meeting up in Orlando. As a personal note, I was elected the vice chair of the MPOAC. So that means I'll have to go to more meetings. Some of the things we discussed up there included, again, legislative issues. The county road program is probably going to see a hit because of the issues with the budget this time around. We're going to be talking about Vision Zero in a little while, and anybody who's been in these meetings more than one time knows I continually rail against Vision Zero being something that it's something that's unattainable, and we seem to look at it as if we have more than one person killed, then we didn't meet it and we move on. I'm seeing that the legislature is taking note of the issues of the increased carnage on our roads. Senator Baxley has a Vulnerable Road User Act that's being pushed forward, SB 278, and hopefully is taking a look at how we can protect our vulnerable users on the roadways. Representative Honchowski and Senator Book have companion bills dealing with an awareness campaign for users of the roadways, again, for the vulnerable users. So I think that it certainly has the attention of the state as far as what we need to be doing as far as keeping everybody safe on the roads. And I'm looking forward to seeing what we as a body do today as we discuss, again, Vision Zero. Finally, there was agreement that we need to have a workshop in the near future to deal with the impact of EV vehicles and higher mileage vehicles and how that's impacting the finances of how we take care of the infrastructure, building out the road system, what money is going to be available. More EV vehicles means less money into the coffers. And so I think that, you know, while any idea of increasing taxes is always a third rail for politicians, I think at some point we're just going to have to come to grips with
the... We don't have any politicians in here. We have
I know, there's
service.
Not a politician among us. At some point, we're going to have to come to grips with the fact that as EVs are more plentiful on the roads, there'll be less and less gas taxes being generated. But all in all, it was a good meeting up at the Orlando, and I'll keep you advised of anything else going on up there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your travel, sir. Okay. On January 27th and 28th, there was the Safe Streets Summit. Anyone here was in attendance? If you were, would you like to give comments on it? No, Andy? Nothing?
Nope. I lost my little card. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Nobody else came on the bike ride? No?
Well, he had his caught up.
Oh, you did? I didn't. Okay. Did you want to talk about
that? Ladies first. Absolutely.
My pleasure. Well, actually, yeah, it was great. I thank the TPA for putting it together. The morning bike ride was exactly what we needed. As a lifelong local here in Palm Beach County, it was pretty amazing to experience the streets on a bicycle or on feet because you just drive by. Growing up here and now seeing it reimagined and redeveloped into accessible and enjoyable bike ped access was great, informative, and a little eye-opening. when I was reflecting on the bike tours, I read through our agenda getting ready for today, and it was perfect for kicking off the Safe Street Summit. There are a lot of good things that I saw, and sadly, several things I can't forget. I actually asked if I could share a couple of pictures that were taken that day. So this is Belvedere. And if you look, there's been a lot of great work done, but there's also a really difficult ability to cross the street or even just step out into it because it's curbless there. So like I said, a lot of great stuff, a lot of not so great stuff. When we invested in Bike Walk, we did it to increase the quality of life. And you can see it beautifully done in places like Grandview Heights, Flamingo Park, and on our north end in Abacoa. We redeveloped where we saw a really good return in investment. Wide sidewalks, crosswalks, shade trees, and safety first. And it was done in areas where the income and property would allow for a solid return on our investment. And after this day here where we went biking, I saw that we have a lot more work to do. Can I see the next picture? Maybe it'll come up. So this is just up the road a little bit. And luckily it's been filled in, but when we did the bike ride, that big tree looking utility pole had just been placed in and there was a probably 7 or 8 inch gap just wide open in front of it. And right where we were biking, there was a woman who was doing her daily shopping with a small cart, and that's what she had to get around. So if you look at these photos, you'll see that the humans crossing and riding in our streets, the ones whose safety is at risk, are located in the areas that they really truly need to bike and walk. Without wide sidewalks, without crosswalks, without shade trees, without safety. And we'll come up to another picture in just a second. But this one you can see, not only is the picture on the right, the utility pole in the middle of a sidewalk. And I wanna say that the speed limit there was like 35 or 40, but that's also the bus stop.
Yeah.
It's pretty extraordinary. There is the middle picture you'll see, there's a bus stop there. That's the bus stop. And you can see the crosswalk to get to the other side of the street as well. No shade trees, no bench, no trash cans, a lot of trash, nowhere to put it. So I'm just saying, like, you know, we saw Belvedere without the curb ramps. It's even here, it's in my hometown too, in Palm Beach Gardens. Our planning and zoning department spent 2 years on every street and sidewalk. And the street I grew up on had a pole really similar to that on our sidewalk as well. So it is everywhere. I'm not pointing fingers, it's happening all over. But on this board, we need to show that we care how these roads are built to protect and keep our residents safe. So I think we need to take it onto ourselves and applaud the board member like Andy Thompson doing his Run the City, where he's running and cleaning 475 miles of Boca Raton streets in 2021. Now, I'm a runner too. So I'm kind of hoping, Andy, when you're done, that we can make it a relay and you can just pass me the baton. And then I'll do it in gardens. And I want you guys to take the next baton. Let's spend more time on our roads. Let's spend more time walking the walk, talking the talk, biking the bike. And we'll see that we need to prioritize life over getting somewhere quickly on a wide road. So I have one more picture, I think, don't I? Do I? That was it? You made one into one big squish thing. I love it. All right. So, and the last thing I'll say is I don't think we need to do any more big studies or throw more money. And I think if we look at the safety initiatives that we'll be reviewing later on today, once we get our census information, we could overlay the two. And I guarantee you, if we look at that map and see where the most fatalities and injuries are happening, they're going to equate with the economy of folks who don't have cars. Right. So I think that's where we should be spending our time looking. And spreading it out to make sure we're truly taking care of people so that once we review our safety report, we can actually see a difference in the next few years. So thank you for the bike ride. It was illuminating.
Well, thank you for your comments, your updates. Appreciate that. Mayor Grant.
So I also took the bike ride in the morning, and it was during rush hour, and I learned a very important name for those buttons on the poles to cross. They're called beg buttons. And, you know, the other name I knew that we went by is called suicide lane. And, you know, it's that middle lane for turning. And I think it's something that we really need to change the name of things, where it shouldn't be a beg button for people to walk or take their bikes across the road. They should have priority over the vehicles. I understand economic development and that we want to have vehicles get to their place as fast as possible. However, if we don't put the priority for pedestrians and bicyclists, the ones most likely to be killed if they get hit by a car, then we are not doing our service as the government leaders to protect people's lives. And I believe that this can be easily answered through the county's traffic program that runs those lights, and that we put those beg buttons as a priority for people crossing, because I believe we had to wait about 4 or 5 minutes to cross Okeechobee Boulevard because we didn't get the right button at the right time. So even though it was a green light, we had to wait for a complete cycle cars traveling up Parker and then again allowing us to travel south to the convention side of Okeechobee. And so that's kind of my big proponent that I like to push to see if the county can't provide priority for pedestrians and bicyclists who hit the beg button in downtown areas. I know that my corner on Boynton Beach Boulevard and Seacrest, I believe I've requested that. It makes a huge difference, especially during the summer, when you're not waiting 2-3 minutes to go north or south. And that's kind of where, if we want to have a Vision Zero, we need to make it easier for people to walk rather than them trying to jaywalk because they know they're going to have to wait 3 or 4 minutes to in the middle of the sun. So that's kind of my big piece that I'd like to move forward to this board.
You want to comment on that? No. Oh, okay. The name, is that like a nickname or is that what actually what they're called?
I'll ask Nick, is that the actual name of Beg Button Suicide Lane?
I think that's a street nickname. Yeah. No, that's a street nickname. But your comments are very helpful, and I'll pass them on to the County Engineering Department and the signal maintaining agencies.
So what is the button actually
called? Todd's taking notes, right?
A pedestrian call button.
A pedestrian call button.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. It's funny how in reality, when people are actually living and dealing with situations, they come up with the reality of what it is.
Yeah.
And that's where that name comes from. So I get that. Anyone else like to comment on that? No? Okay. If no other comments on the Safe Street Summit, are there any general comments any members of the board would like to make at this time? Commissioner? Are you used to being called a commissioner yet? It'll take a while.
And I guess the microphone is on, right?
Yes, it is.
Hi, my name is Maria Sachs. I'm county commissioner, as you know, first meeting. So I don't know a lot of the protocols, but I would imagine that what has just been said is extremely important. And I was wondering if we're going to make just an inquiry to the county engineering or if we can make a serious request to review these intersections for bicyclists and pedestrians. I know that in the county areas, that this is our responsibility as a county commission. I would like to see a joint city and county task force to look at the areas that are of major concern with regard to how many fatalities and accidents we have. I mean, Belvedere and Okeechobee is just ripe for high incidence of fatalities for pedestrians. And bicyclists, I can just imagine what's going on. So I would like to, in whatever way possible, Chairman, I don't know the protocol again.
Okay.
But I would like to make this a priority because I think that as we move forward in a post-COVID economy, you're going to see more people want to walk. You're going to see more millennials on bicycles, and we need to make sure that our roadways, which have been engineered for vehicular traffic, will have a review by us. That's should be our responsibility for a review for pedestrians and for bicyclists. I think that this is really should be a priority of ours. So, whatever, Mr. Chair, whatever the protocol is. I just want to make sure that it is done and okay. Not just on the county, but also maybe joint with the cities as well.
Well, So first of all, this body where we are now is a joint collaboration with the county representatives and representatives for the cities. You want to comment on how we would manifest what she's requesting?
I'm going to give one kind of contextualization remark first. Just so that the group is aware, outside of the town of Palm Beach and the city of Boca Raton, Palm Beach County operates all traffic signals within the municipal boundaries and in the unincorporated area. So the county is the signal maintaining entity that determines how much time is given to each movement at the traffic lights and how what level of priority is given to a pedestrian when they push the pedestrian call button. So that's context to understand who's in charge of that particular decision. Regarding the suggestion that we have a task force that's comprised of county and city members to review ped bike crashes and to ensure that our car-based roadways are also friendly for pedestrians and bicycles, I think that's a fantastic suggestion. And I think that we're kind of migrating into the meat of the agenda. We have an item on the agenda to set our safety targets. And then one of the things I want the board to be aware of that we'll say again and under that agenda item is, we are not this morning asking you to adopt a specific set of actions that we will take to make progress toward those set safety targets. We are going to be bringing to you later this year, June, July timeframe, an update to what we call our Vision Zero Action Plan that does have a specific list of actions that we will commit ourselves to as an agency. And I think this suggestion is one of the items that we will include in that document for your consideration so that we can make sure that we are reviewing every crash that occurs, identifying its causes, and figuring out what can be done to prevent any future incidents like that. And then also reviewing, in particular, I think I heard Mayor Grant talking about the downtown area, the high pedestrian activity centers, looking at how we choose to prioritize pedestrians and bicyclists in those particular contexts is a very important discussion as well, and we can have that as part of our action strategy.
Okay, absolutely. Anyone else?
I just wanted to, share the perspective that from the town of Jupiter's perspective, both our staff and elected officials, the county engineer's office has been very accommodating every time we have approached them and have been collaboratively working on safety issues. So I just want to emphasize, I do appreciate that. I do look forward to the opportunity in June or July to talk about action plans, because potentially there could be some policy guidance given to the county engineer to take on a role that's not historically theirs, to take on a broader accountability. But I'll leave that for June. But they certainly have always been responsive. I want to commend them for that and thank them.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. This was kind of ironic because we actually had the same discussion as at our last council meeting. I walk a lot, and I walk to Publix probably at least 3 times a week. And the intersection, and I think different intersections should actually be treated differently as well because of the amount of pedestrian and bicycle traffic at that intersection. In that case, at that one, there's a constant green left turn signal. So when you're walking across the street, it says, oh, you can walk. But then when you start walking, if you don't watch, you'll get hit. So it's like a conflict point. It's like you think you can walk, but you can't walk, and Right. Nobody slows down. So that's one thing I would like to look at too, is maybe some intersections may be different than other intersections. I know we've got the flashing yellow left to promote traffic, but it's kind of forgetting about the pedestrians. So I just wanted to make that comment as well. And I'm sure our staff's going to be reaching out to the county on that light as well.
Excellent. Okay. Commissioner?
Thank you. Just to Councilwoman Brinkman, based on what I've been told by our engineering department, if that's going on, that's actually an error that's happening. That left turn should not be giving a green walk if there's a left turn arrow in the same direction. So it would be, if you send that to us, I'm sure we'll get it over and get somebody to fix that. there recently was an implementation of some traffic calming on Olive Avenue in West Palm Beach. It's between Southern and doesn't come quite as far north as Belvedere. Probably one of the worst implementations ever done. I believe at this point they put in six, but the speed limit there is 25 miles an hour. The signage denotes a 20 mile an hour safe crossing of these bumps, but there is absolutely no way that anyone could take a vehicle 20 miles an hour over one of these bumps without losing control or damaging their vehicle. We've reported at the city of West Palm, they're aware of it. They went out, their engineers went out and looked at it, realized that in fact these were not done properly. I think the plan, you know, how they did this really shows that there's a right way to do something, and this was not it. Speed tables probably more appropriate in that area. The other thing they did was, I think there's 172 signs that they're adding to all of between. So I did the math based on the feet. I think it's a one sign every 164 feet along Olive Avenue there. I don't know how well that's going to look.
Signs saying what?
God knows. I don't know. They just said they were going to have different signs. 100, okay. There were 172 signs they're going to be adding. So, I mean, I just bring this up. The other thing they did was, when they installed the speed bumps, they crossed over into the bike lanes as well. So the bikes now either have to go over the speed bumps. So
I will agree with you on one thing, because we've experienced the implementation of speed humps. We don't even call them bumps in the village at Royal Palm. And there is a right way of doing it, and there's not a right way. And the litmus test we use is, if the speed limit is 25 miles an hour, you should be able to go at that speed with no, you know, real problem. Just go over the hump and shouldn't destroy your car and hit bottom or anything like that. And if it does, it wasn't properly done. So,
well, yeah. And the documentation, I should say, called them humps, but and the way the engineering, the drawings,
it's the way it was actually done. Yeah,
it was. Yeah. So I hope they get their money back. Or our money back.
Okay.
Commissioner?
Thanks, Mayor. Two things. Indian Trail Improvement District this week is looking at a plan to put speed tables on all of their roads. So I would just ask that they staff are. Take a look at that in the context of today's conversation. Also, in context of keeping our bike paths and our bike lanes safe. I just want to make you aware, since right now I have an opportunity to speak to city officials. The county commission in our last zoning meeting had to revise a condition of approval or development for a GL project. The HOA realized that the trees that they were planting were cracking the sidewalks and causing issues. So we're having to revisit that. Yeah. And if we want to, take what Councilwoman Reed said in her photos about the safety, the condition of the sidewalks and the bike paths. We may all want to be looking at the requirements we place on developers and sort of what trees they plant and in what proximity to infrastructure they plant those trees.
Those root systems will get you. Yep. Any other comments from members on the board? Okay. Seeing none, then we'll move forward from comments from the board. And ask for an update from Nick.
Good morning, everyone. Let me turn my mic back on. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the discussion already. This has been fantastic. I have a handful of items to cover in my director's report. And the first is a celebratory item for us. We are excited to welcome Alora Farr as our new TPA procurement and grants coordinator. Alora's here with us this morning, and we've been anxiously awaiting her contributions to the TPA. We're a small agency, but we, as you can tell, have a lot of responsibilities and opportunity to collaborate with all of you, and ensuring that our financial management is excellent is a core element of doing our job well. So we're excited to have her as part of the team. I want to make sure that all of you are aware, and I know your staff are aware, that our TPA funding program's application deadline is next Friday. Next Friday. We've had mandatory pre-application meetings with a lot of local governments. We expect to see a number of projects submitted by next Friday's deadline.
But I just want to make sure that that opportunity does not pass anyone by. Make sure that your staff are aware that next Friday is the deadline to submit applications for our local initiatives and transportation alternatives funding programs. You are probably aware that the TPA is the designated official planning agency for transportation disadvantaged services, paratransit services that are funded with state grant funds. And the TPA, as that planning agency, is hosting a public workshop to collect input into our TD program and services. That workshop is on February 24th, a week from yesterday at 1:30 p.m. And then the LCB coordinating board, board meeting will be at 2:00 next week. So we got about 30 minutes for the public workshop. If it needs to go longer, we'll delay the start of the board meeting, but we are definitely looking for input into how that transportation disadvantaged service is provided here in Palm Beach County. Mayor Pinto already mentioned the Safe Streets Summit, so I don't want to belabor the point. We did have great attendance, great participation, and I do want to recognize two of our member local governments. One is City of Boynton Beach was selected as the 2021 Complete Streets Community in Palm Beach County, so we're very excited to honor them.
Yep.
And then Councilmember Andy Thompson from Boca Raton was selected as our individual champion for 2021. And I want to mention with respect to Councilmember Thompson, both you've heard about the Run the City initiative, and I love the idea of expanding that and making it into a collaborative effort, a marathon across multiple jurisdictional boundaries. That's fantastic. I also want to mention that the Transportation for America, part of Smart Growth America, is conducting a Champions Institute for local government elected officials to help become aware of what's being done successfully in other parts of the country and then champion complete street efforts locally. And Councilmember Thompson was selected to participate in that program. I'm not gonna put him on the spot and have him give you an update right now, but we are looking forward to hearing what he's learned from that and maybe all becoming a little bit smarter in the process and from his participation in that. Next item I wanna remind you is we are indeed seeking Citizen Advisory Committee nominations. If you have not nominated someone to serve on our Citizens Advisory Committee, each one of you is able to nominate one individual. We would love to have 21 members on the Citizens Advisory Committee. Right now we have 11 vacancies. 11 of you have not taken that opportunity. Please consider someone in your community that would be interested in transportation. We have a statutory obligation to consider minorities, elderly, and the handicapped by Florida law. We also, by our own bylaws, ask you to consider people from the construction industry, people from development, people engaged in the relationship between transportation and land use. And so if you have someone in your community that's interested in that, we would love to have them as part of our Citizens Advisory Committee. Next slide, I just want to give you a brief highlight, particularly noting that the County Mobility Summit, we had a question come up at our last TPA board meeting. When will the results of that summit be made available? The polling questions, the kind of a summary of what was discussed and what was heard in response. That information has all been posted now by the county. It was a county hosted event. All that information is posted at the website at the bottom of this slide, but I wanted to highlight three items in particular. First, when participants, there were about 120 active participants in the event, private sector, government, public sector, various responsible agencies. When they were asked to provide a single word to describe their future vision for mobility, the TPA's vision, the established vision of the TPA that was created in 2017 came out right on top. The vision of a safe, efficient, and connected multimodal transportation system is spot on. So I want to commend you for selecting that in advance. I don't know how much influence we had over the respondents, but I think we're all moving in a collaborative direction at this point and trying to identify how to implement this vision well. And then I wanted to mention that 97% of the participants in the workshop identified fixed route bus and or rail transit as a key element in the future mobility solution for Palm Beach County. So lots of discussion there, and we'll have Clinton on the agenda later this morning to talk a little bit about how we're implementing and improving our transit service. And then also almost 71% of our participants in the workshop believe also that local first last mile environment, that walkable, bikeable environment is also critical to the future mobility system that we will enjoy in Palm Beach County, that we need a connected network of sidewalk and bicycle facilities. And so I just wanted to highlight those. Lots of good information available on the website, but those three things really stuck out to me as I looked at what they had published and posted. Reminder to our local communities, the American Associations for Retired People does host or provide an annual call for projects for community challenge grant funds. These are small dollars for quick action projects that help communities become more livable for all ages. And applications are due by April 14th. So we look forward to encouraging each of our communities to potentially submit an application there. Those of you who have local law enforcement police forces, especially those, when you look at the map of pedestrian and bicycle fatalities that's included in our agenda, if you are one of the communities where a lot of those circles are located on the map, I want you to make sure that you're aware and you avail yourself of the state's high visibility enforcement funding. These are grant funds available to local law enforcement agencies. They pay essentially to train and then provide overtime funding for law enforcement personnel that is willing to spend additional time at high crash locations, identifying and reinforcing good behaviors for pedestrian and bicyclists, and then issuing warnings and then citations for bad behaving pedestrians, bicyclists, and vehicle operators in those high crash locations. It's an intervention approach to change the culture in places where we've seen a high level of crashes. And so I want to make sure you don't miss that opportunity. And then lastly, just want to remind the board, our strategic plan does try to give you as many opportunities as we can to become educated on what is happening with respect to transportation in various parts of our country and in various parts of the world, especially now as we're doing a lot of virtual events. We try to identify upcoming transportation conferences and events that you might be interested in. We post them to our website. If you have an interest in a particular event, please let us know. We do reimburse the costs associated with participation for our governing board members. And Mr. Chair, I guess that concludes my report this morning. Okay,
thank you, Nick. Any questions for Nick before we move on? Okay. With that, we're on agenda item 1G, which is the acceptance of the consent agenda. Is there any member who would like to remove an item from the consent agenda for discussion?
Move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? We have no opposed. March, please let the record show the consent agenda was approved unanimously. And with that, move to section 2, action items. Action item 2A is a motion to adopt a resolution approving the amendment number 3 to fiscal year 21-25 Transportation Improvement Program. We're going to get a briefing on this from Jason. Jason, you're on.
Good morning, everyone. As he mentioned, my name is Jason Price. I'm the TIP coordinator for the Palm Beach TPA. This morning, I'm going to present to you amendment number 3. And this is a request by FDOT to modify two projects and add two projects to the Transportation Improvement Program by way of this amendment. Okay, just to start, I wanted to review when is a TIP amendment needed, and there's a few cases for why this action is taken. The first is when a project is added or deleted to the Transportation Improvement Program. That triggers an amendment. The second one is a cost increase of more than 20% and $2 million for a project. And the third is to change the change of scope of work, which is the change of the length changes of the project by a half a mile and 20%, or the number of through lanes. And just to review as well is what projects does an amendment impact is it's only the projects that that are in the amendment that are listed, that are presented. And also that although there's other projects in the TIP, they are not impacted by the amendment. And we went an additional step of also providing a point of clarification by our TPA legal staff to include as part of this amendment a point of clarification of what an amendment does and does not do. So now I'll go over the four projects that are listed in this amendment, the first two being existing projects with proposed changes, and the following two as new projects being added to the Transportation Improvement Program. This first project is the City of Boynton Beach, various locations, and that the project length was an error. So in this particular amendment, an increase in the project length warranted the amendment, and you can see that by the length, the proposed change, the length has increased beyond a half a mile, which requires an amendment. And the reason for this was a local roadway was missing from the project description and had to be added back in, which changed the length of the project. This next project is somewhat similar in that the correct project location was initially listed on the project description. And when this project, and so the existing project description, Bridgman Drive, Wellington Road, and Prairie Road at various locations was changed now to Bridgman Road, Wellington Road, and Longwood Road, which is the correct termini for the project description. And with this error, this change prompts an amendment to make this type of correction. The next two projects are new projects that are being added to the TIP, and the first being the Boca Raton Passenger Rail Station at Brightline. The total amount for this project is $46 million in total, but that $46 million is made up of three component parts. One is the Boca Raton received a CRISI grant in the amount of $16.3 million. Now this CRISI grant is federal funds, so that's what brings this item to you today is the federal dollars are being applied to the project, and so that brings it into the TIP. There are other funds as well, and that's $19.6 million for private funds from Brightline, as well as $10 million in ad valorem funds from Boca Raton, making the total for $46 million. Now here, just to go over the component parts of what makes up this project, there's a few different components here. First is the new Brightline station, and that's listed in blue. And then adjacent to that will be a newly constructed parking garage that will serve both the Brightline station and the adjacent public library. There'll also be some roadway improvements as part of this, and a newly constructed, relocated community garden in addition. There's one final project. This is also a new project that'll be added to the Transportation Improvement Program through this amendment, and that is at the Banyan Boulevard Railroad Crossing. This is a new project to install safety equipment, including a new cantilever arm and new safety upgrades for the hardware and software. And just to make a distinction of which railroad crossing this is the South Florida Rail Corridor, and that SFRTA operates the Tri-Rail on. Banyan Boulevard crosses both railroad crossings, and this is the crossing that is being referenced. And with that, I'll answer any questions. And this is a roll call vote. Yeah.
Okay.
That's
before you take any questions from the board, Margie, do you have anyone out there who has a public comment they'd like to make?
I did receive a public comment ahead of time, but I don't see any hands raised. So if you're ready for the public comment, I can read it.
Yes, we are.
So I had a public comment provided by Kimberly Switzer in West Palm Beach. Their comment is, we just moved into the neighborhood with our toddler and plan on having another child. We bought a new home off of 57th Road North to get away from the loud, crazy traffic and enjoy as much quiet as possible and see and be near nature and such. Having the road the way it is now is perfectly fine. It does not need to be expanded. The expansion would not only harm the environment and water as we are also on well out here, but also disturb the neighborhood even more along side of the extension. Please find another solution that does not encroach on the neighborhood here or the preserve any more than it already has?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that anyway.
Mr. Chair, for clarification, the comment was received by a new resident of the Indian Trail Improvement District in the western area, not in the incorporated area of West Palm Beach. And the project that they're referring to is not related to the TIP amendment. They're actually referring to the widening of the State Road 7 corridor between Okeechobee Boulevard and 60th Street. Not involved in the TIP amendment. And as the packet suggested, the memo from our legal counsel is clear that an action to approve or reject the TIP amendment has no effect on projects that are not included in the amendment.
Thank you for that update. Is that the only early comment or remote comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
No one has their hand raised. Do we have any comment cards submitted by anyone present?
I have received none, Mr. Chair.
Even though we don't have a comment card, is anyone present would like to comment at this time on this agenda item? Okay, seeing none, I'm closing public comment then on this agenda item, and we're open for comment from members on the board, starting with Commissioner Weiss. Were you up first?
He was first.
All right, go. He pointed at you.
Oh, I can go. Yeah. Okay. Would it be possible, since we have legal counsel and we have a statement from them, would it also be possible then to have a statement added when taking the vote as to the lack of support of other items contained in the TIP, and that be as a statement? Because I think these items are good, but I do not support the extension of State Road 7, and I do not want to go on the record as any way at this point in time supporting that project.
The short answer to your question, Commissioner, is yes. We can add something to the resolution. When this issue first came up, I think it was the last time we were considering a TIP amendment. A suggestion was made that if the board wanted to, you could always add some sort of statement that specifically states that this has this amendment has nothing to do with anything else in the TIP.
So in other words, the motion would include the comment, and which would go on the record, that anyone voting on this this particular amendment, it is this amendment only and has nothing to do with the other items already on the TIP?
Correct.
Is that the right type of wording? All right, so when we finally get a motion, if we could word it appropriately. Go ahead.
So.
I still got comments.
Second.
All right, but. Hold on to that motion, okay? Vice Mayor, you're up.
Yeah, okay, thank you. To that issue, Commissioner, I was happy to see Paul's legal opinion with respect to how an amendment does not, in your opinion, validate or approve what's already been approved. So those who have taken a position against a specific project in the original approval don't find themselves now approving what they didn't approve in the past. So I appreciate that you have memorialized your opinion on that. My disagreement with you aside, I embrace your opinion and I will not argue against it any further. So I think that gives some of the of what you're looking for, that if you are called upon to approve an amendment going forward, that shouldn't be read as you approving other projects that are within that document that were previously voted on that you may have voted for or against. So I think that does clarify that, and since State Road 7 is going to be here for a long time, that it's not going to require you to continually take a position that you feel necessary with respect to that project if it is not specifically part of an amendment that comes before us.
I just think by adding language to say specifically that this does not endorse, a vote for this, does not endorse any other, previously approved items, I think
And I see no problem with that. Belt and suspenders, probably. And if that certainly makes it easier for people to then move forward on the amendment, focused just on the amendment, I would have no problem with that. And one other comment, just to commend my friends from Boca Raton on working on this deal with Brightline and getting significant funding on the station. I mean, I think it's apparent from the previous slide, our stakeholders want alternatives to passenger vehicles, and passenger rail and fixed route are things that we certainly need to be working on. And I think the Brightline station is going to be a boon to commuting for not only Boca Raton residents, but residents around Boca Raton. So I certainly am going to be very much in favor of seeing this approved. Thank you.
You want to comment on that, Andy? Yeah. All right. I agree, though. Good job on that, getting that done. Yeah. Okay. Mayor?
I just wanted to ask the question. I know that we're adding things into this tip. I just wanted to make sure that they don't supersede others that are already in and in line. So I just wanted to understand how that works so that we don't see these pushing others aside.
You want to address it, or you want Jason to address it?
I can address that. Mr. Chair and Madam Mayor, these projects are seeking and receiving additional funding, the two new projects. One is a federal rail highway crossing funds that are not currently applied to any other projects in Palm Beach County. The other one is a discretionary federal CRISI grant, which stands for Consolidated Rail Infrastructure and Safety Improvements. It's an FRA, a federal grant program available only to applicants who seek it. And when you win the money, you win out over other applications, but you don't adversely affect any other projects within your local community.
That's all I was making sure of, just yep. Making sure we weren't. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Vice Mayor Weinroth, for your comments. I just wanted to take the opportunity to publicly thank again Representatives Deutsch, Frankel, Diaz-Balart, and both of our senators who were supportive to the CRISI grant. It was a team effort. Thank you.
You think you've established the pathway that for other cities that will have this potential opportunity to follow? Okay.
We hope so.
Somebody?
Mr. Chairman, toward Commissioner Weiss's comments, I have some language that could be added to the resolution. This would be added as an additional sentence at the end of Section 2 of the resolution. This amendment does not affect or readopt any other provision of the TIP.
So does that language have to be part of a motion, or you're saying it will just we'll make it part of the documentation?
You could accept a motion to adopt the resolution with that language.
Sure. Okay. All right. Any other comments from members on the board on this resolution? If not, I'll open the floor for a motion.
I'll make that motion with to amend with our attorney's language.
I'll second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Can we take roll call?
Yes, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure I have my notes properly. So I will remind members present in person just to turn on their mics when voting. And those virtual, please remember to unmute yourselves. Joni Brinkman.
Yes.
Joelle Flores.
Yes.
Stephen Grant.
Yes.
Jim Koretsky.
Yes.
Douglas Lawson. He'll be marked as absent. Maria Marino.
Yes.
Melissa McKinley?
Yes.
Michael Napoleone?
Yes.
Corey Nearing? He'll be marked as absent. Joseph Paduzzi? He will also be marked as absent. Shelley Petrolia?
Yes.
Fred Pinto?
Yes.
Chelsea Reed?
Yes.
Maria Sachs?
Yes.
Scott Singer?
Yes.
Andy Thompson?
Yes.
Pam Triolo?
Yes.
Catherine Waldron?
Yes.
Robert Weinroth?
Yes.
Greg Weiss?
Yes.
Steve Wilson is absent. It passes unanimously, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Let the record reflect the final outcome of the vote. Moving on to item B. This is a motion to adopt a resolution approving the 2021 safety targets. I'm sure we have some interesting comments about that, but we do have a presentation. Andrew is going to give us that presentation.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Andrew Euler, Deputy Director of Program Development here at the TPA. And so I'll be going through just a high-level presentation on the safety performance measures that we are required to report on and then set targets for annually. This is a federal requirement. And so we've come to this board in the past, and you all have set targets going back all the way to 2018. We've been doing this annually. Something new for you this year is actually going to be our transit operators are also federally required to set performance targets. So I'll discuss a little bit more about that as well. And then there's a lot of information in your backup on this item. I have a pretty good amount of data here on our slides as well. I'll try to go through it slowly so to be more clear. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them at the end. So to restate our vision here at the TPA, a safe, efficient, and connected multimodal transportation system, with safe being one of the main pillars of our vision. And the federal required performance measures and targets that we are required to set are the number of fatalities, the rate of those fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles traveled, number of serious injuries, the rate of those serious injuries, and then the total number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. The new measures that you have not seen before related to our transit operators, and this one is for Palmtran, are similar to the ones we've seen in the past, but they are the number of fatalities, the rate of fatalities per 100,000 vehicle revenue miles, and vehicle revenue miles is when the transit operator is in service. So it doesn't include that dead time on the way to the route, right? So it's only when they're picking up passengers. The number of injuries, the rate of injuries, the number of safety events and those rates, and then lastly, the vehicle revenue miles, average distance between mechanical failures. So those are seven new measures that Palmtran is required to report on and provide targets, and then the TPA is also required to either accept those measures or create their own targets for these. And this is for both modes of Palmtran. So that includes the fixed route system and the paratransit system. So in total, that's 14 new measures that you're seeing. This is a bit of history on what we've done in the past at the TPA. You all adopted targets of zero fatalities and serious injuries going towards Vision Zero in 2018, 2019, and 2020. FHWA has set a target of Vision Zero as well into the future. And so they believe that zero fatalities on our nation's roadways is the only acceptable goal. AFDOT has also formally adopted targets of zero for 2018, 2019, 2020, and again here in 2021 at the state level. And just a reminder that we have Vision Zero cities here that are coming up in Palm Beach County that are moving towards more Vision Zero: West Palm Beach, Boynton Beach, and Palm Beach Gardens. Okay, this is the most detailed table I have for you. It is the most important. I'm going to go through it slowly for you all. So what we have here is 2013 to 2020 numbers for total fatalities and serious injuries. And then going horizontally across are our performance measures. You'll see the grays are the annual numbers, and then we're showing an average for those in bold. The averages are a five-year average of the past 5 years. The reason why we're showing both is that numbers can jump up and down, fluctuate year to year. So you can kind of see more of a trend when it comes to the averages. And the two I wanted you to pay most attention to are two new years that you haven't seen yet, and that's 2019 and 2020. Just to point out, though, that 2020 data is still coming in, so we are still expecting to see newer numbers for 2020. It takes a few months to get all that data in and cleaned by the state, and so we do expect those numbers to go up a little bit more than what you see in 2020 already. But I just wanted to mention a little bit of the trends we're seeing in 2019 and 2020. So I'm showing arrows here for 2019, and really that's just showing that the trends are going up for most of these measures in the wrong direction. So fatalities average over time has been going up, fatality rate, the serious injury rate, and then also the total pedestrian bicycle injuries and fatalities. So we're not heading in the correct direction when it comes to safety. We are seeing just generally a little bit of a decline in serious injuries, which is nice to see, but it isn't a rapid decline towards zero serious injuries either. And then I wanted to point out again for 2020 numbers, you know, although these are preliminary, the numbers aren't looking good either, right? So at the beginning of the pandemic, when there is less vehicles on the roadway, less people traveling for work, you know, maybe you'd expect to see less fatalities and serious injuries. Unfortunately, we're still seeing very high numbers of fatalities in 2020, even though we had a reduction in the vehicle miles traveled, which is probably going to increase our fatality rates as well. And then also in 2020, we did see an increase in the pedestrian bicycle fatalities and serious injuries, jumping from 208 to 212 in 2020. So again, trending in the wrong direction. Marge, can you put me in? Thank you. And so this is a map provided in your backup. And this is really just showing, I want to show you North County and then South County zoom in of this map. And this is pedestrian bicycle fatalities from 2018 to 2020. And the reason we wanted to focus on this a little bit in more detail is that this really accounts for around 30% of the total fatalities that we are seeing out there from 2018 to 2020. And even though it's 30% of our total fatalities, when you look at Hughes community numbers for pedestrian bicycle, it's only around 2%. So these are our most vulnerable users, and they're a very large disproportional share of the total fatalities. Some other trends seen in this data, 75 not at an intersection, 75% around after dark, with 20% of those being in unlit conditions, 20% involving alcohol or drugs, and then 7.5% rain and fog related. And then I'll just pause here for one more second just to look at the map, and you can visualize sort of where these are happening most in our county. And then here's the southern portion of the county as well. So numbers have been going in the wrong direction, and we're just going to take a second here to bring up some of the things related to COVID-19. We do have in our strategic plan to look into the impacts of COVID-19 on our transportation system. So we're providing a more detailed report involving not only safety, but other travel patterns related to the last year for you all later this year. But just to figure out what's going on with these increases in severity of crashes, even though we're seeing a reduction in the amount of driving out there in our county and also nationwide. Well, looking at a report that was put out by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, pulled a few reasons for this. Number one being reduction in congestion results in higher speeds. So when you have less vehicle congestion out there on the roadways, you have the ability to go faster as a driver. And so this can obviously increase the speeds of those in the roadway. And so those lead to higher severities of injuries and fatalities. Next is possibly these drivers on the roadways during this pandemic may have been less risk averse. There's also some preliminary data to show that these ones who are getting in crashes have a decrease in seatbelt use and an increase in alcohol and drug use. And then lastly, this is an observed trend, but here in Palm Beach County, you can see nationwide, we've observed an increase in the pedestrian and bicycle activity. So if you combine that with higher speeds out there on the roadway with more people walking and biking, more vulnerable users, you could relate, it turns out to have higher amount of total severity of injuries. So that's why we're seeing maybe those upticks in those trends. And also providing backup was our Vision Zero Action Plan update. So we provided a report card about what the TPA is doing to further our Vision Zero goal and to improve safety here in our county. So we originally adopted this plan after our first time we adopting the Vision Zero targets back in 2018. We came back with a plan that you all adopted in April 2019. And then we're going to work as staff and with you all to have an update to that plan to look more deeply into our analysis of the crashes and our actions in that plan to start making greater progress. And we're going to have an update for you all later this year in July 2021 is what we're shooting for. Just a few updates this year about what we've been doing for our Vision Zero actions. The first one is advocating for a unified statewide crash data system as one of our actions. So, you know, I showed a few slides ago about preliminary data, and honestly, there's the data in that table I showed recently was from two different data sources because there's a few different dashboards out there and different sources at the state level to gather this data, and some is more accurate, some is more updated and recent data. So what we're really pushing on the state to do with a few of these is to work together with all their departments to come up with one unified source so that we're no longer trying to discuss what that appropriate number is, and so that you all have the number to go off of, and we're not trying to give you caveats about, oh, well, you know, this is related to this one's not as accurate as this one for these reasons. We'd rather just to have one number to go off of that everyone can use and we can all push forward and not have to worry about using a good data source anymore. So the state's been working with their other partners throughout the state as well. So it's DHSMB, it's the FDOT State Safety Office. And then lastly, University of Florida has a Signal 4 analytics dashboard. That's great. They're all working together now to make sure that they're collaborating and having one unified statewide crash data system that they're trying to roll out in the future. Next here, the TPA, collecting pedestrian bicycle counts to really get better numbers about activity levels out there. Those can be hard to capture, but we're working with a pilot program with Palm Beach County and Boca Raton signal operators. And so we have software now that is counting at a few locations, a few intersections, the pedestrian bicycle activity. And we're so hoping that those are accurate and yield good results, and we can expand that to other signals in the county. Next is collaborating with FDOT to create safety funding process to go after specifically the Highway Safety Improvement Program funds. And so right now we get well over, I think, $130 million statewide annually. And those typically go for state roadways, trying to create a process with FDOT so that can be opened up to some of these other areas in our communities that aren't on state roadways who could really use those funding as well. So FDOT's working on that process now, and we're expecting to have a workshop with them with the state later on in March. We continue to add complete streets and safety elements to our resurfacing projects. So every time the state comes to us with new resurfacing projects, and I know the county has plenty of resurfacing projects they're doing, we try to incorporate more complete streets and safety elements to improve safety on those. And we're also encouraging local Vision Zero commitments. So new two communities that are going towards that now, Boynton Beach and Palm Beach Gardens. And then lastly, for an update for 2020, we're gathering public input via online comment maps to see you know, where our issues are, and the public can go on that map and put in their issue or concern or safety concern or whatever, and we'll have staff assigned to those and they respond to those comments. And so that's live right now on our website. Okay, almost done. This is just a recap of the targets. So our recommended targets for 2021 for number of fatalities, rate of fatalities, serious injuries, the rate of those, and then total number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries, setting a target again for 2021 of zero. As I mentioned before, FDOT has also set a Vision Zero target for these. And next is the recommended 2021 transit targets. There's more details in your backup regarding these, but what you see on the screen here is the measures on the left there, and then we'll have it for the fixed route and the paratransit. And you can see the 2020 actuals and then the 2021 targets. Palm Tran also has a Vision Zero target for fatalities and fatality rate of zero. They've always, over the past few years, Palm Tran's really been a safe system once you get on the on the buses, professional drivers. They haven't had many fatalities at all over the past few years, I think maybe one or two. So very safe system, and they continue to push for a target of zero for fatalities and fatality rate. And then you can see their targets for those other measures that are required to set those four: injuries, injury rate, safety events, the rate, and then the distance between mechanical failures.
Just a quick question on the injury issues on transit. Are these motor vehicle related, or are they like people tripping on the steps or something like that that get included in this?
Yes, I believe they're inclusive of both those on the bus, but also hitting other vehicles or people. But we can have that confirmed by Palmtrain, I believe.
We have. Well, he's right behind you. But just as a point of clarification, that's all.
Mr. Mayor, Chairman, and okay. Members, just for clarification, we are very proud of our safety record, especially in this area of fatalities. On our fixed route, we haven't had a single fatality in the last 5 years. On our paratransit services, it's usually involved with another vehicle, and the person in vehicle two suffered the fatality. And in my recollection, over the last 5 years, there was one. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I believe that is it. So what you're adopting today is a resolution, and it's involving the targets that you see here for Palmtran in 2021, and then also the targets for the entire transportation system for 2021.
Okay, before we open up to comments from members on the board, are there any public comments that have previously been submitted or have been submitted now?
No, Mr. Chair, for both questions.
All right, so no one has their hand raised virtual?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We have no physical public comment cards submitted here this morning?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, we have no public comment cards on this agenda item. Is there anyone here that would still like to comment, even though you didn't submit a card? Seeing none, I'm going to close public comment on this agenda item and open up for questions and comments. And we're going to start with you because this is one of your favorite topics, okay?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to abridge my comments about my lack of support in general for Vision Zero, and will be supportive of the adoption of the resolution. But I think it's important, and I think we've taken some lessons from our pandemic, and we know that statistics don't fully represent the pain that's being inflicted on victims and families of these tragic events. And we need to be doing more than just analyzing numbers once a year. And I think we need to be taking a more proactive approach. And I think you take a look at airline accidents and you see the kind of investigation that occurs every time there is any type of accident with an airliner, whether it's general aviation or whether it's commercial aviation. And I think we need to adopt that kind of approach. There's not a lot of numbers here that we couldn't get our hands around on a quarterly basis, and try to drill down into these incidents to figure out what it is that is common about these accidents that are causing the carnage on our roadways, and what can we do in fixes rather than just continually looking at the wrong direction of these trends. So as I said, I'm going to be supportive of the adoption of the resolution, but I think that we need to do more than that today. I think we need to commit ourselves to a process where we are going to have more information brought to us on the specifics of these accidents to identify what could have been done to have not had this accident occur, to not have lost a life, and to determine whether there are things that we can do engineering-wise or education that would perhaps reduce this carnage. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Jim, will you next?
A number of comments regarding this one. This one is one where certainly I embrace Vision Zero. I am going to acknowledge publicly here that I'm embarrassed and ashamed that the Jupiter's not recognized such. So whatever I have to do to make that happen, Nick, if we had to have adopted something, you know, please send me that. Because the town does, in fact, embrace it. Which was heavy heart. I observed that in our town, we had three fatal crashes in that three-year period. Everyone weighs heavy on us. And as a local body, we do have a meeting annually with our engineering staff and police staff to review all locations of accidents, both vehicular and pedestrian and bicycle. And that has enabled us, I think, to have truly more of a commitment to Vision Zero that we need to have, because we're looking at all the solutions, not just infrastructure, which we tend to do here, and FDOT does. But we as local government bodies, we have police and other resources that can help in education and enforcement. So, you know, I certainly embrace Vision Zero. I embrace the zero target, because I'll tell you, if someone was to say, well, let's pick a target that's not zero, I want it to be zero in Jupiter and in fairness, and I want it to be zero everywhere. But that'll only happen if we all embrace it like it is achievable, and I believe it is. We do have done a lot of the, what I guess is referred to as high visibility enforcement. It gets a bad name though, because it's really high visibility education. And then after the education happens, it's enforcement. That's the way that, you know, I can tell you that the town has approached that. We even are proactive. We have an intersection, I'm very familiar with, it's as I leave my community every day, and the crossing guard was having problems with people not observing her enabling kids to get across the street. And it was an incredible presence by our police for 2 days to make sure that they were helping to educate. It's a very unique intersection and it's different, and that was part of the problem, but they come out and we try to educate to make sure that all parties understand their role. So, you know, I could continue on with this, but I certainly embrace it. Nick, action item, tell me what we have to do to get credit for that we embrace it, because we do. I guess it's some kind of must have to adopt the resolution, I guess. But then lastly, if you look at section 2 in the resolution, really is missing something, and it's missing something that the vice mayor commented on and I'm commenting on, is what we can do.
Specific action.
Right, and so suggested language that I collaborated with Nick about and would propose for D to add an insert D, and that is to encourage each governing board member to work with their respective local governments to support the Vision Zero safety targets through pedestrian and bicyclists education, enforcement, and infrastructure projects. We have to just be relentless about that. But without that in section 2, without that insert, it's really missing something that's fundamental. We'll never get there if each of us don't do our part with our respective governments that have roles to play in this. So I'm going to ask that that be added to the motion to adopt that. Thank you.
So you'd like to see that included? You'd like to see that comment included in the motion?
Yes.
Can you repeat it?
Mr. Chair, actually, we have it on the screen so that we can share it with the virtual participants as well as the members in-house. Councilman Koreski did reach out to me and suggest this, and frankly, I think it's a fantastic idea. I think that we can do a lot together at the TPA when we're assembled as a collaborative body, but there's also action needed in each of your respective local governments. And so the request was,
could this resolution also include an encouragement to each of the local governments to take this to the next level? And with a focus, we talk about the three E's for safety, the engineering, which is the infrastructure projects. How do you build the surfaces that we walk on, bike, and drive upon? The education, how do we train people on proper behaviors? What are we supposed to be doing? And then the enforcement, how do we identify those folks who are not doing what they're supposed to be doing and then encourage them to behave properly going forward? So to the extent that the TPA board embraces this, I would be happy to share it with the respective city managers, county administrator, and say, let's take this to the next level. Let's work on this together at a local and at a collaborative regional level.
Okay. Just as related to that point, I think you said earlier that Boca Raton and Palm Beach Gardens have taken some action. What was that action? Was it a resolution? Was it?
Yeah. And Chelsea knows just as well. It was a resolution to support Vision Zero.
Okay.
And I think the second slide actually omitted West Palm Beach, who has done something similar.
To that event, I get tons of, I'm sure all of you do get tons of requests about making certain resolutions about different causes, things that are going on. Perhaps a letter from the TPA to all of the 39 cities bringing that to their attention, and this encouragement is, would they be willing to actually do a resolution in support of this and whatever else that may entail? That makes sense? Yeah. Okay. I think Commissioner Waldron was next.
Yes, thank you. I support this very much. I do will say, as somebody who moved down here about 20 years ago, I've never seen so many cars run red lights. It's very dangerous for pedestrians, yeah, and bicyclists. But I also would like to ask you your opinion. I was reading, this pertains to the decrease in serious injuries, but the uptick in fatalities. I was reading that with the increase of SUVs on the road, the likelihood that when a bicyclist or a pedestrian gets hit, because of the height of the grill, if it's a car, you would get a bounce up onto the hood, so you wouldn't get killed. You would maybe suffer some broken bones. But with SUVs, because the height's higher, you don't get thrown up on the hood, you just get run over and more likely to be killed. And I was wondering if you what your thoughts were on that theory.
You want to respond to that?
Yes, thank you. That's a good point to bring up. And that has, we've seen that discussion nationally. I haven't personally seen any, I haven't read any true articles and statistics on that, but it does seem to be a concern with the height of the vehicle, like visibility of that, not being able to see the pedestrian or bicyclist more easily because they're lower to the ground. And then also the sheer mass of a larger vehicle as well, right? So just when it comes to physics being, you know, a greater impact. So I think the concern there is valid, and I haven't seen the statistics on it, but I'm sure it's out there. We can look more into that as well.
Okay. Mayor Grant.
Yes. Thank you very much. I'd like to echo what Vice Mayor says about quarterly reports. What came to my mind is the opening segment of the Simpsons where they said, oh, 3 days without an accident, and then they had that accident with the ladder falling. I'd like to, you know, just get as much data as we can. Board Member Waldron said, it's that let's see if we can get the make and model of the vehicle, the day, good the point. Time. Yeah. And that way we have a better understanding of the data to make adjustments. And then the second part of that, the adjustments is that engineering, education, and enforcement costs money. Where is this money coming from for Vision Zero? The main thing that I would like to think have the county look for is a mobility fee, because their current impact fee does not work necessarily for Vision Zero. If you're just expanding roads, you're not going to make the roads safer. And so that's kind of, you know, my ability to talk to the county commission now to let them know if we really are for Vision Zero, we need to have more mobility options than expanding roads, because we need funding for those mobility options. So I'm in favor of this. And do we need to have a second or any additional language to get a quarterly report as part of our Vision Zero?
Actually, the plan all along has been to ramp up the reporting timelines. But more importantly, if you remember the chart that was put up that showed all the different dot points where things were happening, staff is going to be doing and working in conjunction with county support staff, drilling down on that information. And the information data points that you all have been discussing, talking about, will be brought up so that you really can get an understanding as to what's really happening, and there could be different causal effects in different parts of the county. But understanding that, because that really has to drive, well, it's nice to talk about taking some proactive action to prevent it, but we need that drill down will give us a better guide on what those actions need to be in what places. So, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, along those lines, I would suggest that we request copies of the police reports from those specific accidents and have them reviewed. And again, this would give us the opportunity to drill down into the specifics of each one of these situations so we can determine what could have been done to have saved that life.
When you say we, are you talking about TPA staff or are you talking about?
Well, I think the TPA staff should be the ones to make the first pass at that information and perhaps distill it to some summary. But I think also in our notes for a meeting, it would be helpful to have those actual police reports available to us that we could take a look and for ourselves analyze them. And there might be something that we would like to raise at one of these meetings.
I don't know if we need, I don't know if the requirement would be to actually see the police reports and make sure the data in the police report was included. And because what we really want to create is a more centralized database model, all right, to collect this information to make it easier to do the drill down analysis. But you want to add anything to that, Nick?
I'm happy to share as much as we're legally permitted to share. There are some constraints on the information that can be distributed in a public agenda with respect to the crash reports. But the TPA is an agency that can request that information and at least review it and then summarize it in a, gosh, what's the, there's a phrase, with no publicly identifiable information. We can
redact them so that have just the information necessary to identify the causes rather than the actual victims.
Exactly. Okay.
Someone else? Yeah, Commissioner.
Thank you so much. I think that Vice Mayor's point is well taken. Every law enforcement agency in the county has an office that is set aside specifically for vehicle accident investigations. The vehicle crash reports, to my knowledge, are public. And I think that if we really want to do a thorough review of accidents, we need to pull in law enforcement. One, there's been complaints that we don't have enough law enforcement. Two, there are a lot of hit and runs that occur that could be taken care of by maybe more cameras on certain intersections. And I'm not talking about red light, cameras. I'm talking about cameras for public safety. Also, law enforcement analyzes when there's every accident, whether it's a pedestrian or vehicular or bicyclist, they have an analysis that is professionally done on their accident reports. And I think that that would give us a very good insight into what caused the accident. That would be professionally done more than, trying to guess, roadway conditions and things like that. So I concur that we need to pull in law enforcement in this review and speak not just with the sheriff's office, but also with the city, the municipality, police departments as well. Thank you.
Okay.
And I learned something. You put it up there. Pretty cool.
I just have a question and a statement. So the question is, what's a timeline on this kind of information we're requesting from you? So if we're saying, please find out this, find out that, I had requested an overlay on our census data after we get it to see how much of our non-car owning residents are the ones involved in these accidents. what kind of a timeline are we putting the TPA up for as far as the work that needs to be produced?
Well, I think the discussion today is going to inform our presentation to you of content that we would recommend included in the Vision Zero Action Plan. And then what I've heard this morning is that a quarterly reporting on the fatal crashes, the pedestrian bicycle fatal crashes, would be informative to the TPA governing board. So we could include that as a standing agenda item once per quarter, presenting that information, an analysis of the crashes, the causal factors, and right. what potential interventions could be made to prevent that from happening again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Mayor, I do have that Councilwoman Brinkman has her hand.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. I just more of a comment on this map. I didn't see Palm Springs specifically listed, but Lake Worth Road obviously is on this with quite a few dots. Just as an informational item, we are working with FDOT on the road resurfacing project on there. They did a presentation to us that offered, besides potentially bike lanes, a wider sidewalk, as well as additional cross access points across Lake Worth Road, which I think is really what we need. I think that'll help a lot. But in addition to that, we're also doing a mobility study, which I'm hopeful will result in a Vision Zero result as well. So I decided I wanted to give an update on that to the council. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Oh, go ahead, Jim. Sorry, I didn't see you.
I just wanted to, you know, build on what is being asked of our TPA staff. Certainly, in my role as a governing board member, I certainly want to know and need to know about what's happening within the county. But as a local elected official focused on the town of Jupiter, we have a policing agency. It's more efficient for me to get it from them than to burden, staff to get it. So I would suggest maybe that collaboratively, Nick, that you're going out and asking for this. We also, as governing board members, can make sure that our respective policing agencies are doing that, so you're not having to hunt it down. Respectful to the county commission and different challenges you have with regard to that. But I'm talking about at a municipality level. It's an easier ask for us to make sure that happens. And then, because I would hate to see staff spending a lot of time, chasing down something when we can influence a more collaborative, just turn it over if that's what we want.
You want to comment on that? No? Okay. All right. This so we don't lose the focus of what we're really talking about here. We're talking about the integrity of the data gathering process, the consistency, which you mentioned, is something that we have to come to. And then doing a more, what I would call a deep dive in analysis of the data, so that from that analysis, we can determine what the actionable items are that we can take and how that really works out, going through the different cities, because it will look and sound differently in different cities, but the end goal is the same. And it's all based on what we call data-driven decision-making, essentially. So you want to add anything else?
No, yeah, you're correct.
Okay. All right. If there are no, I'm sorry, I didn't see your card, ma'am.
I've been quiet today. Vice Mayor Weinroth, I understand your point about Vision Zero being unattainable. However, if we don't have a vision, then we stop advocating for safety. So Vision Zero is an important component of what we do because we have to continue to advocate for safety. And so I'm in support, and that's just my comment.
Okay, if there are no other comments from the board members, I'd like to just close out with one comment, and it's related to really what you just said, to put some context around what it means when we say we're adopting Vision Zero. Vision Zero, we're expressing that as a target, but it's an aspirational target that we're shooting for. I don't know if any of you have seen this, but I've seen it about three times now. I think it's a public service announcement sponsored by a state transportation agency where they start out interviewing a citizen saying, gee, how many fatalities you think are acceptable this year? And the guy went, oh, I don't know, 50? He says, really? They said, really? Then they showed a picture of the 50 people that were affected. And it was his family members, it were his friends. So they went back to him and says, how many you think now? He goes, no, I guess it really should be zero. That's the context of what we're doing here in terms of adopting, saying Vision Zero. We know that we're not going to achieve that, but you know, any one of us sitting in this room today, we certainly wouldn't want it to be one of our family members or friends to be lose their life in a vehicle fatality. So we're saying as a body, we don't think anybody is acceptable. We don't think there's any acceptable number, knowing that reality is there will be numbers. And so we're saying, since we don't think any number is acceptable, the only number that's really acceptable is a zero number. So that's the context of what we're really trying to do with this notion of Vision Zero. And with that said, if there are no further comments, I'd like to have a motion to approve.
Mr.
So moved with the amendments on the screen.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Margie, can we do
I'm sorry to interrupt. I did have a member of the public raise their hand after you had closed public comments and during board member comments. Did you want to recognize them? Otherwise,
we have just one?
Just one hand raised virtually.
We'll give that just one.
I have Kevin Cairo. If I'm going to permit you to speak, please unmute on your end and then you will have 3 minutes. Please state your name and address for the record.
Thanks. My name is Kevin Cairo. Can you hear me, by the way?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. My name is Kevin Cairo. My address is 9680 Lago Drive in Boynton Beach, 33472. Thank you so much for taking my comment after closing the public comments. I really appreciate that. I just wanted to make a couple notes because I think Vision Zero is obviously a noble goal, but it's tricky. One of the things that is really tricky about it is that one way in particular that would be kind of perverse to drive towards the goal of Vision Zero is to drive, to drive the ridership and level of walking down to zero, because then there's no one left to kill. And so I think, you know, this dual goal of raising ridership and mode share of walking and biking is really important too, especially because there's safety in numbers and there's a lot of evidence of that. And in particular, I live the experience of very frequently trying to cross at a pedestrian crossing and there being a car turning right. And we're both waiting for the light, but they don't give me, they violate my right of way because they're just not used to looking for someone crossing at the intersection, because it happens quite rarely, in the suburbs. Another thing is that vehicle speed is just, I think vehicle type is really important. There's a lot of issues with SUVs and the data in terms of how many fatalities they cause when they collide with pedestrians and bicyclists, but vehicle speed is much more significant. Kinetic energy is proportional to the mass of a car or to the, and the velocity squared. So traffic calming is probably really important for bringing down that kinetic energy and the deadliness of collisions. And lastly, I have a question regarding SUVs, which is just if the TPA has any influence at all on policies that could, nudge people away from SUVs, but I'm guessing
that is no.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. But that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your comments, sir. Appreciate it. Okay. Now with that, we have a motion in a second. Watch, can you take roll call?
So as a reminder, those present in person, please hit the base of your microphone to turn your microphone on. And those that are attending virtually, please remember to unmute yourselves. Joni Brinkman.
Yes.
Joelle Flores.
Yes.
Stephen Grant.
Yes.
Jim Koretsky.
Yes.
Douglas Lawson is absent. Maria Marino?
Yes.
Melissa McKinley?
Yes.
Michael Napoleon?
Yes.
Corey Nearing is absent. Joseph Peduzzi is absent. Shelley Petrolia?
Yes.
Fred Pinto?
Yes.
Chelsea Reed?
Yes.
Maria Sachs?
Yes.
Scott Singer?
Yes.
Andy Thompson?
Yes.
Pam Triolo?
Yes.
Catherine Waldron?
Yes.
Robert Weinroth?
Yes.
Greg Weiss?
Yes.
Steve Wilson is absent. It passes unanimously, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Please let the record indicate the result of the vote. With that, we'll move on to item 3A. We're information items. I think we have Mr. Forbes here to give us an update on things.
There you go. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Clinton Forbes, Executive Director of PalmTran. I'm also joined with Jeremy Baker, our Director of Administrative Services. Of course, Mr. Bon Laren, who provides leadership sponsorship of PalmTran, and Sean Hall, our leader in governmental affairs at PalmTran. Thank you for this opportunity to give you an update on our fare collection system and interoperability project. I'm going to ask for your indulgence. We have a bus operator graduation that's going to be happening momentarily, and I'm going to have to scoot out right after the presentation. So I'm going to beg for your indulgence in advance. I'm also going to apologize for the redundancy of the presentation for the five county commissioners. We had a presentation on, I think it was January 26th, and we updated the board with a similar presentation. So with that, we'll start. Where do I point this? Okay. This just outlines our presentation. But primarily our presentation will center on the impacts that COVID has had on our implementation schedule. Right up front, right off the bat, we have to thank the TPA for your funding sponsorship of this project. The TPA has provided $5.3 million in flex funds for capital costs associated with this project. We have been using those dollars to implement the project. The balance of the project will be funded by 5307 federal funds. So thank you. The benefits of the new fare collection system enhances customer convenience and makes PalmTran services more user-friendly. It allows for faster boarding, which contributes to our key performance metric of improved on-time performance because fare payment is faster and easier and so important to these times, it mitigates the spread of germs. So with contactless boarding, with smart cards and the phone app, it minimizes physical touch and helps with COVID-19 mitigation. It also significantly expands customer opportunities, and we'll talk more about that to purchase passes and reduce cash handling. And so transit properties that have modernized their transit systems with new fare collection systems have experienced more than 30% reduction in cash handling. And we anticipate experiencing something similar to that number. I was thankful to be a part of the Miami-Dade implementation and Jacksonville implementation, and that number is right in alignment with the cash handling. And what that does is it allows your staff that counts the cash to do other things. And so it definitely makes your organization more efficient. Ability to replace lost, damaged, or stolen tickets for riders with registered accounts. So we introduce a smart card, similar to a credit card. Currently, we have a magnetic card. If a person purchased that card for $70 and mid-month they misplace it or lose it, they've lost at least half of that value. With the new system, if the customer registers the smart card and adds a $70 value on there, with this, which is a pass for a month, and loses that card mid-month, they call us. We disable the old card and restore the remaining balance of their value on that card, and they continue riding. And so that's one of the benefits of this technology as well. It enhances security for potential fraud. This technology is very difficult to duplicate. It's microchip technology. The technology is not impenetrable, but it makes it much more difficult to penetrate and will have better back office systems to quickly detect any type of fraud.
This is slide really illustrates the evolution of our fare collection system over the last 13 years. I'm not going to focus on each of these dates, but the first date, which is 2007, we installed our current fare collection system. That system has now exceeded its useful life. And we're in the process, of course, replacing that system. If we move down to where the red text is, the Board of County Commissioners approved the contract with GemFare for this project on March 17, 2020. We had planned installation for the fourth quarter of 2020. And that was, of course, delayed due to COVID-19. Many of the retailers that we are working with, such as the CVS and the Walgreens of the world, they did not want to take on any new business during this time. So we delayed the project to March, April for system implementation. And again, this continues to be a moving target because of the impacts of COVID. We learned just last month that NCOM, that provides the networking services for this system, they had a major COVID outbreak in their IT section. Wow. And nearly the entire staff had to quarantine. And so that further delayed the project. So we've moved the implementation date to May, June with an asterisk, okay? But that's what our new date, May, June, with system implementation. This slide shows the morass of fare media that we currently accept. Very difficult to manage by our bus operators, very easily duplicated. Our new system will change this. As mentioned earlier, our fare system has exceeded its useful life. The fare boxes are obsolete. We experience multiple failures on a daily basis, and parts at this time are extremely hard to get. When the fare boxes fail in service, because it's not a safety issue, we're not collecting fares, and therefore we're not getting revenue. So it's dire that we get these replaced. The other thing is the fare media. The fare media is also very old technology. If you look at the back of our current pads, that's a magnetic strip. That technology, and I'm not sure if any of you are old enough to remember this, but that is cassette tape technology. Remember 8 tracks and
what's that?
And I think Weinroth mentioned reel to reel. Yeah, that's the type of technology, and it's really easily duplicated. I won't in this public forum talk about how they do it, right. But it's very easily duplicated, and so we'll be replacing that technology. This is our new fare payment options organized, right? So my philosophy has always been that, you know, projects like this invite choice riders. And that's what we're looking for. Any business is looking to add customers. And that's what we are. We have our loyal customers, our transit dependent customers that need us, that don't have any other mobility options. But we also want to add customers that have a choice. And this project, I think, exemplifies that. And so often one of the impediments of using transit is fare collection, because you walk up to the bus and you ask the question, well, how do I pay? And we want to remove that guesswork. You should be really able to pay your fare with anything on your person. And that's the system we've designed and that we are going to deliver. The smart card is microchip technology, as we talked about earlier. That will be introduced as a part of this project. We still have to accept cash, okay? So cash will still be accepted on the bus. We'll also add mobile app technology similar to Starbucks. You'll be able to buy a transit pass from the PalmTran app and pay your fare through that app. We'll accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. So if you carry a credit card, now your credit card has to have near field communication. And that's a little sort of audio symbol icon on your credit card. If it has that, you don't really have to touch the box. You just put it in within proximity and it pays your fare. Smartwatch, of course, and Google Pay and Apple Pay will be available as well. This is the, these are the various components of the new fare collection system. Of course, the new smart card is named, I think appropriately named, the Paradise Pass. Last summer, we had a naming contest in Palm Tran to brand our new smart card. There were dozens of great suggestions, but ultimately we landed on Paradise Pass, which is emblematic, I believe, of Palm Beach County and all of it, all it has to offer in its beautiful beaches, parks, and other amenities. So the card was actually coined, the name was coined by Charlie Bodoker and Lou Ferry of our of the Palm Tran team. We'll get 165 new fare boxes, 22 ticket vending machines, of course, the phone app, and the retail networks, the retail outlets. And so what this does is it expands tremendously the opportunity for customers to purchase their fares. Currently, the customers have about 22 locations to purchase their fare, including libraries, the intermodal, 50 South Military, and so about 22 locations. We are a very large community, very large county. This will make fare payment ubiquitous. So you will be able to walk into a CVS, Dollar General, Walgreens, and be able to purchase fare media from those locations. So from 22 to hundreds of locations in our community. It will also offer web-based fare payment and point-of-sale equipment. These are the fares we're proposing. This is subject to the Board of County Commissioners' approval. We just wanted to share this with you if you had any comments related to this as we develop the item. We are anticipating taking this to the board on March 9th, but these are the proposed fares. The first three rows where you see fare product, current fares, and proposed fares, we are not recommending any changes to our one-way cash fare, no change. The one-day pass will maintain at $5, and the 31-day pass at $70. The new fare products and policies are the below rows, which are the three-day pass we're recommending at $12, the seven-day pass at $20, and of course, this new smart card, our cost is roughly $2, and so we're offering that at $2, our cost. But initially, during rollout, we plan to distribute thousands of complimentary smart cards so that initial cost will not be borne by the customer. We'll pay that cost and give them a free fare card. Replacement cost is $2. And of course, a policy, two policies here, fare capping. We want to introduce fare capping. It gives the customer the best value. And just to illustrate this just briefly, so a one-way fare is $2. If you take three trips, it's $6, all right? Our one-day pass is $5, right? So what happens with fare capping, you know, currently you'll pay $6, but with this fare capping, it gives the customer the best value and automatically upgrades or changes that fare, those three trips into a one-day pass for $5. And then they can take unlimited trips. Same thing with the 31-day pass, 7-day pass, and 3-day pass. Once you reach that that fare amount, it will transform your fare payment into a pass. And so that's fare capping. And we're eliminating accepting pennies. and I tell you, in the properties and communities that we've implemented this, this was always like, don't do this. You're dead if you eliminate pennies. And we've done it because that's essentially what the industry standard is. And it's usually haven't been a problem. In Palm Beach County, we collect approximately 1,000 pennies a day. What's problematic about this is with the current validator and the new validator, it validates every coin. So if you have to pay 50 cents of your fare using pennies, you have to stand there and validate each penny, or $2 for that matter, 200 pennies, one at a time. And so it does create inefficiency, it does create on-time performance issues, and so we are eliminating pennies. And we collect, again, about 1,000 pennies a day. It's not a huge amount. Okay, and interoperability, a very important component of this project, right? So, you know, transportation should be contiguous. In our motor vehicles, we want it to be contiguous. When we drive on I-95 or the turnpike, we don't concentrate too much on county boundaries, right? We drive right through those county lines seamlessly. Well, we want the same thing or same experience for transit riders, at least come close to it. And that's what we're trying to offer with this project, is seamless travel through the four transit properties in this region. PalmTran is a data-driven organization. We try to use good data to make decisions. And so recently we engaged in a survey at our six Tri-Rail stations and two bus connections in South County. And what we learned is, and it probably has a lot to do with COVID, but the transfer activity is not as sizable as we thought. So we're still engaging in that analysis, in that survey, but it's not very sizable. It could be because of COVID, or it also could be because we don't have a technology that allows people to seamlessly travel through the region. Nevertheless, we are continuing with our regional work on this project, working with the leaders of these agencies, Miami-Dade Transit, SFRTA, and Broward County Transit. As you can see in this schedule, most of them have implemented their systems. And we believe that the phone app will be the mechanism to offer that regional payment. As you can see in this presentation, each of the properties that have implemented new fare collection systems, they all have a phone app. We will also have a phone app as a part of our system. And so we believe, you know, working with the region, that the phone app will be the system to allow the transfer. And finally, Mr. Chair and members, our schedule, in terms of current activities, we continue to test the system. We're engaging in internal training. Of course, we are going to implement a robust outreach and training effort through social media, the website. And of course, we have to do some of this in person, and we'll ensure that we do it responsibly and is COVID-19 compliant. Our installation schedule, which we hope we can stay on track. Things are getting better with the mobilization of the vaccines. So March, we'll be engaged in pilot testing. In June, we'd like to go live with the new system. And of course, as I shared with you earlier, the fare change recommendation goes to the board on March 9th. So with that, Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation. We are available for one question. No, we are available for-
Actually, I was gonna suggest if there are any questions, because Clinton does have to move and we're starting to lose folks as well. But are there any questions for members on the board?
Just a comment. Please. And I'll make it quick because Clinton's already heard this. I'd like to make sure that our bus system actually incorporates Martin County, because that is one of our bordering counties in the north end. And I know that the Marty comes and goes through Palm Beach County. So I know that we're doing south, but let's try to also include the north. And I will always continue to say that this is a public transit system. This is for the people that can't afford other ways and other means of getting around. We need to really make sure that they know that they are able to purchase tickets with cash and make that really available to them. Because I don't know how many of our riders are using a smartphone, I mean, a smart watch, I don't even have one, to ride on our buses. So please make sure that cash is still available, and your Paradise card, make sure there's a lot of ways for people to know how to buy those, because these same people do not have checking accounts and do not have credit cards.
Duly noted. But I'll tell you, Commissioner, you'll be surprised how many of them have smart cards and smart iPhones, but cash is definitely will still be available. I did fail to mention that on our buses in a previous project, we implemented USB ports on all of our buses, so that if you have that technology, right, you're able to charge your phone, yeah. And we have free Wi-Fi on all of our vehicles.
Commissioner?
Yes. Clinton, we've got Martin County to the north. We've got Broward County to the south. Please don't forget Hendry County to the west.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. All right, one more. Last one. Mayor Bryant. Mayor Grant?
Yep. Real quick, I was looking at the cost, And, you know, I have my suggestion of instead of 3 for $12, 3 for $10. So you buy 2 days, get one free. In addition, you know, that way for the 7 day, you buy 4 days, you get 3 free. And it works out well for the 31 days where you buy 14 days, you get 17 free. In addition, is there any reduced fares for low-income individuals? And what is the process of getting those types of fares?
Yes. So, and we didn't include our entire fare table, but we do have through the TD program a discounted pass. I believe that pass, if I'm not mistaken, is $15 for, and that's an unlimited pass that will not change in this program. They'll be able to purchase a smart card for $15 and have unlimited trips. Of course, there are half fares for eligible riders, such as those who are 65 years or older and meet other requirements.
Okay. And so that will all be through the app and other?
Yes. That okay. Still will be available with the new technology.
All right. Thank you.
This one, go ahead, Chelsea.
I'll be very quick. That's okay. I just want to say thank you for getting this going. And we do need to really take a look at this. This is over $5 million that we're investing in this right now. So it's worth going through, and it needs to get us prepared as light rail is coming in, and we are thinking more and more about that first mile, last mile. So go for it. Let's get it right. Let's get it going so that as the years come up, we can continue to use this, you know, the fare collection system appropriately. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. We appreciate the presentation. Okay, in the essence of time, and we're losing folks because they have other commitments to meet, I'm going to ask if we could take this next agenda item 3B and push that to next month. That'd be okay, we could do that? And
yes.
Because I know we wanted to talk about item C, which is the Florida Bicycle Month. And...
yeah, we have a brief presentation for item C, and that would probably do well to conclude the morning.
Okay.
Good morning, everyone. It's great to see everyone here. Thanks for sticking through if you are still here, and I hope that if you're not still here, you are going to listen into this. My name is Alyssa Frank, and I'm the Ped Bike Coordinator here at the TPA, and I have some very exciting news. So March is Florida Bicycle Month. We are going to be, well, we'll get to the next slide. I don't have it. It's okay. So, getting too excited, sorry. So in previous years, we have actually received a total of 12 proclamations for Florida Bicycle Month. If you have had a proclamation in the past, we are really encouraging you to have a proclamation again this year. And if you have not had one in the past, we want you on this list. We want you to have one. So please reach out to me for a sample proclamation. If you have any questions, we do have them available on our Walk Bike Palm Beach website as well. But please encourage your municipalities to, bring in these proclamations. And if you guys do have one that's signed, please send me a copy so that way we can have it for our records. That'd be awesome. We also are encouraging all the municipalities to host Florida Bicycle Month events. A few that have happened in the past include bike rodeos, super fun days, work bike to work rides. I have heard of a couple municipalities that are putting on some events, but if you are not on our calendar yet and you do plan on hosting something, please reach out to me so I can add you onto there. Or there is also on our Walk Bike Palm Beach website, there is a link to add events yourself as well, but let me know and we can help advertise for them. So this is our website where we have our calendar. This is a calendar from last year. So ignore the events on there now. We're just looking at the website, but walkbikepalmbeach.com. Super important. Everything for Bicycle Month, all bicycling activities, everything is on that website. So take a look at it. And again, if you have any events coming up, you can add it on there or you can reach out to me and I can add it on there too. And then, of course, most exciting, we are going to be doing our TPA group bike ride on Friday, March 26th. We are going to be meeting here at the TPA office at 7:45 in the morning and departing at around 8. It's approximately 4 miles, the bike ride that is, and we should be coming back to our office at around 8:45 in the morning for refreshments. please, if you are interested in participating, reach out to me. You can call me, you can email me. I am going to put you on the RSVP list and ask you for your shirt size so we can all be riding in unison with these awesome yellow Bike Palm Beach website shirts. So they say 3 feet on the back and we can all be riding safe and bright and as a group. So please reach out to me if you're interested in participating in this. And that is it.
Thank you very much for that update. Are there any questions?
Just comments? One quick question. Is it BYOB?
Yes. No. We will have a smaller refreshment. Coffee.
I meant bring your
own bike. Oh, bring your own bike. I'm sorry. Bike? Yes. No. So yes, if you do have a bike, bring your own bike. If you do not have one, I am working on getting bikes so we can have some here available. I do not have an exact number yet, but I'm working on it. So if you do have a bike, please try to bring it. If you don't have a bike, reach out to me and that way I can make sure that we do have a bike available for you. Yep.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for that update. Item D, we do not have any partner agency updates, I'm told, correct? Okay. Now, item four is administrative items. Is there anything on this list that anyone would like an update on today? If not, I'd just like to remind everyone that our next meeting will be March 18th. Thank you all for persevering and being able to stay for the meeting. We stand adjourned. Thank you.